Behold, a podcast for the ages. Recorded live from the interdimensional terror vortex of their subterranean dwellings comes the Rough House Podcast version 3.0. Two galactic warriors put down their warhammers and battle axes to perform a more noble task. Complaining about professional wrestling on internet-purchased microphones.
Now with more Simpsons references and Kota Ibushi thirst.
This is the Rough House Podcast with Marty and Christoph.
Good morning, dear friend of the Rough House Universe, OG 538. It is Schlegel from Schlegel's Soapbox, usually a Patreon exclusive. Well, Marty and Chris, unavailable to record an episode this week, and I said, you know what, the fellas have been busting their ass, dropping incredible content on you, okay? Rough House Divided, Schlegel Soapbox, weekly updates, WWE, AEW, New Japan, and more. That I said, let's keep that train rolling down the tracks, especially on a week where I feel you, the Rough House listener, would like a little, I don't know, insight, commentary on a pretty wild week in the world of wrestling. Now, Chris and Marty already did an excellent WrestleMania 40 Night 1 recap. I encourage you to listen to it. I loved it, agreed with some, disagreed with others. We'll get into it on the next Schlegel Soapbox. I'm eager to hear what they thought about Night 2. I'll share some of my thoughts of actually being there. Night 2, was it the greatest Mania ever? Was it overhyped? Was it underhyped? The new era begins with Triple H. But that's not what today's episode is about. Now, if you listen to the last Rough House, Chris did a very honest and open preamble preface that he is not a WWE fan. He has biases, and the man is honest, and I respect it. Do I disagree with some of his points? Yes. Does he disagree with mine? Yes. And that's good, but I was most appreciative of his honesty in regards to how he was going to feel about WrestleMania Night 1, which makes me eager to talk about Night 2. So I will start with a preface and a preamble of my own here. I like AEW. I think AEW is necessary. I think AEW is so incredibly good and healthy for the industry, maybe one of the greatest things to happen to the industry in a very, very, very long time. I have some people that I consider to be acquaintances at AEW. And today I wanted to discuss the backstage footage that was finally shown, security camera footage, the scuffle, the dust-up between Jack Perry, Jungle Boy, and CM Punk, his final match against Samoa Joe at Wembley 2023, upwards of 8 months after the fact. Now, I watched it. Seemed like a lot of us did. They got a decent rating. I believe they were right around 820,000 for a Wednesday night Dynamite. And it was everything that I suspected it would be. Obviously, you've seen the footage. If you're listening to this, there's a good chance you are neck deep in the wrestling scuttlebutt water cooler talk, and I'm not breaking any ground to you. So if you've seen it, you've seen it. If you haven't, well, go out and watch it. And this was a response to an interview that CM Punk did, I believe, WrestleMania week with Ariel Helwani of the MMA Hour, where he gave his account, his side, remember, multiple sides to every story, of what happened that fateful evening at Wembley when he got backstage and he and Jungle Boy had a confrontation and it turned into a dust-up, and eventually we all saw him get released, Jungle Boy get suspended or banished to New Japan, and then Tony Khan come out and have the one-on-one sort of confessional interview with himself on camera saying, I had to release CM Punk with cause. I had feared for my life. Well, he gives that interview, CM Punk, to Ariel Helwani, and in a reactionary move, they decide to announce, I believe on Collision Saturday night after Night 1 of WrestleMania, that by God, they're going to air the footage. And I think the universal sentiment and a sentiment I share was, what are you doing? This is a bad idea. This is not going to benefit anybody. As a matter of fact, the only road to success, redemption, whatever you want to call it, the only positive path to walk, had the footage shown something so grossly different, so vastly diverting from what CM Punk said, that people can watch it and go, oh, wow, okay, CM Punk's accounts weren't anywhere near this. He threatened verbally Tony Khan. He was going to kill him. He came backstage and sucker punched Jack Perry. He went on a rampage and began to swing wildly like a man out of control at everybody backstage. And what ended up we saw was exactly what he said. I'm going to say 95% of what he said. I believe, if I can recall correctly, he said, CM Punk, with Ariel Helwani, that at the end of the scuffle, Samoa Joe walked over and said, you know, to break it up and all that. That's not what happened. Samoa Joe picked up Jungle Boy and walked him away like a child. I mean, he bodied him, walked him away. You saw Chris Hero, I believe Aleister Black and others, some agents, then move CM Punk aside, and it was over. You did see a moment where it appeared CM Punk pointed off screen, began to yell behind a bank of monitors at what we could assume was Tony Khan, his line, you're a clown, I quit, and then it was over. And that was the footage. That was it. It was everything that CM Punk, love him or hate him, essentially said happened. And we know that Tony Khan, and I believe others, might have prefaced it before the footage aired. It's going to tie into story. And the story was that the Young Bucks said that the night of Wembley, they became distracted. They had to put on their EVP hats. They had to take off their wrestling hats and handle this backstage fracas. And what that did is it took their eye off the ball. And that night, they ended up losing to FTR. Was it an attempt at a storyline connection? Yes. Was it successful? That depends on who you talk to. The vast majority of people seem to not be more excited for the match at Dynasty. Some people, I'm not going to go less excited, but I think the overall arc is don't give a shit. That did nothing for the story for me. In particular, I wasn't like, ooh, I wanted to see the 50th matchup between these two guys, but now, ooh, that really lit the fuse on this thing because they were distracted that night. I don't believe that for a second. It didn't get me more invested in it. I do tip the hat to them trying to connect it to story, and I apologize if I bounce around the timeline of this a little bit, because we're going to get to the Dynamite overall. We're going to get to some of my thoughts about AEW, but to circle back to what I said at the very beginning, AEW is so incredibly necessary. AEW is a place for people to work. It's a place for people to thrive. It's an option. It's something different. You'll hear Chris and I, and I believe Marty to an extent, espouse our love for Lucha Underground, which was so different at a time when the WWE was a little meh, okay? A little milquetoast. Dare I say, boring on a good day, dog shit on a bad. That Lucha we just loved. It was an alternative and one that could be done. One, unfortunately, that just didn't have the penetration, didn't have the financing, didn't have the national recognition to survive, and it went away. And, you know, that's one of the great losses in the world of professional wrestling. But AEW is necessary, and it is good. And the dawn of AEW was sort of a reaction to WWE. And we're going to talk about reactions here a little bit. You see, WCW, back in the day, 95, 96, they found footing in a time where the WWF at the time was really meh. It was very average. You had a lot of the profession-based gimmicks where you had, you know, hockey players, you had football players, or excuse me, not football players, baseball players. Oh my God, Abe Knuckleball Schwartz, look him up. Holy shit, one of the 50 gimmicks of the Brooklyn Brawler. You had a bunch of odd, what did you do when you were a younger professional wrestler? I was this. Well, guess what? You were a garbage man. You're now Duke the Dumpster Drozzy, and you are a wrestling garbage man. It was very cartoonish, and I think people began to get sick of the profession gimmick-based wrestling. And then suddenly, Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, who was essentially Scarface, Diesel, who was essentially, I don't know, you want to say a NPC from a Roadhouse film we never saw, not the new one, very gimmicky. They show up on WCW and they have their real names. It's Scott Hall. It's Kevin Nash. And then they introduce Hulk Hogan as the third member, and Hulk Hogan became a bad guy. And people were tired of the good guy, do your push-ups, say your prayers, eat your vitamins. And they adjusted to people's tastes. They gave people what was lacking on the other channel, and they found success. And that success became the NWO, and it spawned the success of the WWE Attitude Era. It began an era of sometimes crass, rated R realism, but still, the pendulum did swing away from a time of cartoonishness and eye-rollingness and severe unbelievability in an industry that can sometimes be rife with it. And you had this new era where you could say, that's that guy's real name. I wonder if the things he's saying are also real. That guy has real-life heat with that guy. I wonder if those punches are also real. Well, fast forward, 2017, 2018, 2019. It's the era of Bullet Club in the Elite, New Japan Pro Wrestling, Ring of Honor. And on the WWE side of things, it ain't good. Jon Moxley is swimming as this weird, awkward character who's wearing a gas mask. Roman Reigns, the poor fella, had yet to become the head of the table and was being forced on everybody. We had way too much Miz in places we didn't need them. We had way too many NXT call-ups of people that were amazing in NXT away from the Watchful Eye events and under the learning tree, the tutelage of Triple H, that were incredible NXT, brought up to absolutely disastrous results. Well, then you had the Elite have All In in Chicago. They fill it up 10,000 strong alongside New Japan and Ring of Honor. And a benevolent man by the name of Tony Khan, massive wrestling fan, says, hey, let's make this real. They reacted to what the WWE wasn't doing, and they gave people what they want. They gave them an alternative. They moved away from the same bump and feed, the same Pritchard, the same McMahon, the same Johnny Ace, Laurinaitis style storylines that just became borderline boilerplate. They gave us something new. They reacted the same way WCW reacted. And back in the day, WCW, they reacted. The WWE began to thrive. The Monday Night Wars erupted, and you had one of the greatest eras in wrestling history. Well, fast forward to 2019, October, I was there. I was there at the very first Dynamite in DC, and the air was palpable with change. An arena and a major market was filled to the brim. I got to see and got emotional at the sight of Kenny Omega for the first time. A man I'd only seen in YouTube clips, I'd only heard legends of from Japan, elaborate entrances, incredibly reviewed matches, legendary stories of this agent, this wrestler, this wrestling god, this best bout machine that somehow had never been in the WWE outside of a small farm system stint back in the day that apparently went very poorly. I got to see him on the ramp. I legit became emotional. There he is, a man that I wanted to go see wrestle in Japan for years. You get to see the introduction of someone you didn't know who they were going to become with Sammy Guevara taking on Cody Rhodes in the very first match. You got to see the formation of the Inner Circle. Jericho, admittedly at the time, a massive, massive get, becomes this incredible villainous stable. My God, is that Jake Hager? Jack Hager? Is that Proud and Powerful? We didn't know who Proud and Powerful would be. They were LAX at the time. And dear God, this Sammy Guevara fellow, the guy that came out earlier in a panda head, he's now the villain. And you got to see this night that was different. It was beautiful. There was story, there was hope, and there's an arena full. And it reminded me so much of early, good, successful 96, 97 WCW. And the WWE did what they do, and they pivoted. Now, it wasn't an immediate pivot. It wasn't the same night Dynamite aired and the very next SmackDown. Guys were throwing away all the scripts. We're going to be good now. No. That was not the case. The pandemic happens. Everybody has to adjust. People that were being signed to big, massive contracts on WWE were suddenly being let go left and right. And both companies sort of had to fight in their own way. WWE, they have a great big Thunderdome arena filled with screens that history will look back on one way or another. Was it successful? Was it not? Was it interesting? Yes. AEW, they decided to, at first, empty arena and then line the ring. One side faces, one side heels. Very interesting idea. There's not going to be a lot of bodies, but there's going to be some. There's going to be some interaction out there. And they both fought through it however they could fight through it. So then we get on the other side, and they get the biggest acquisition, AEW, of their lives, of their short-lived company's history, and they bring in CM Punk. And a man that we never thought would return to wrestling returns, and he cuts a promo that he left wrestling a decade ago, alluding to he didn't wrestle in WWE when he left ROH. That was true wrestling. That now that he's in AEW, he is a wrestler again. Kind of a veiled shot at WWE not being wrestling, and one with not without merit. I mean, there's a lot of really long, drawn-out, pointless story in WWE that wasn't going anywhere, and they were just starting to begin the ascent of a villainous and eventually megastar, mega-heel Roman Reigns, and CM Punk, he makes his way there. And things seem great at first. He's working with young talent. It seems like he's backstage. There's photos of him posing with the Young Bucks. There's him in the Sting makeup in a three-way alongside Darby Allin and Sting, Steve Borden, prior to him retiring. And things seemed good. And then everything goes sideways. The night of the Hangman CM Punk promo, where all indications are Hangman, he swerved. He went off script. He did not discuss anything that CM Punk thought he would be discussing. CM Punk also gets into this in the Ariel Helwani interview, and CM Punk's logic was, well, there's supposed to be fisticuffs at the end of this. If he's veered from the verbiage, is he going to veer from the fisticuffs? Do I got to double leg this guy if he decides to get froggy with me and start throwing some heat? Now, luckily, it didn't happen, but this all emerged from some report that has since, I'm pretty 99% sure, proven to be bullshit, that CM Punk, no love lost, will never be friends again with Colt Cabana. CM Punk had him fired and had him removed from the roster per his request, and Tony Khan adhered to him. That made its way through the Meltzer newsletters, which we will get to, and it somehow permeates through the locker room, and it gets to Paige, and I think people got Paige all spun up and said, you should go out there and give him what for, and he gave him what for. And at that point, the fuse of the explosion would be lit. And from that point forward, things in All Elite Wrestling and CM Punk never recovered. There was the all-out brawl-out. There was the all-in dust-up. There was shots taken on each side, sometimes in ring with the returning elite who'd been suspended after All Out, mimicking Punk's botches in the ring, Kenny Omega mimicking the biting, and Punk on the other side via social because he was nowhere near the ring, taking shots of his own. And it became to be rather petty, and it began to reflect some of the worst eras of the Attitude Era and the younger days with the Huckster and the Nacho Man on WWE side making fun of the aging stars at WCW. And then on WCW side, them revealing the results on Monday Night Raw to keep you from having to watch them stick with us here on Nitro, which eventually would prove to have disastrous results. And I started getting twinges of not the good era of the Attitude Era, the good moments of the Attitude Era. I started getting tastes of the bad. I started getting sniffs of this isn't, no, please, you're making the mistakes of the past. You're going low, and it never did anything good when either side would take some pretty bad shots at the other. I mean, I can think of a good one here or there, maybe WWE's DX invading, quote-unquote, WCW Monday Night Nitro, which was a wild spectacle to say the least, but some of the other ones, not great. I mean, the aforementioned, giving away results. Hey, folks, just letting you know, don't turn away. Mick Foley's going to win their heavyweight championship tonight. Ugh, that'll put some butts in seats. And it turned out to put some eyes on television sets as everybody changed from Nitro over to Raw. And it was a bad time for a while when WCW began to flail and flounder. Well, fast forward to this week, and the footage is aired of the backstage brawl between Jack Perry and CM Punk. And a brawl is 10 times above what it actually is, a statement. It was a scuffle that I have seen at work. It's a scuffle that I'm assuming every major sports franchise has seen in a locker room amongst their own players. It's a scuffle that you'll see in a playground. There was words exchanged. There was a shove, a headlock, a breakup, a yell, a walk-off. And everything, as I said earlier, was exactly, for the most part, what CM Punk said would happen. No one came out of there going, man, what a liar, what a piece of crap. Can't believe he did this. I can't believe he spun it in such a way that I had no idea that he took a running crescent kick and shattered Brandon Cutler's jaw. None of that happened. And it seemed to be the universal sentiment above people, amongst people, in wrestling, out of wrestling, fans, performers, this was a bad idea. You could see it on the faces of Taz and Tony Schiavone when Excalibur, who I'm assuming he's a company man, I've made my thoughts known about Excalibur and his performance, Tony Schiavone, their thoughts of it known without having to say a word. As Tony Schiavone looked down, looked away, didn't speak, eyes borderline closed. Taz, pretty bad poker player. You could read it on his face, what he thought about this. And when they cut back after the footage aired, and neither one of them looking too pleased with what had just happened. And the next day, WCW 2000 was trending. Russo era WCW was trending. And that's not what you want to be compared to. And I'll tell you, as a guy that watched WCW, I was a WCW fan. I watched it during the ascent. I watched it during its peak. I watched it during its decay. And I watched it when a Thelma and Louise, that fucking thing off a cliff, I never stopped watching it. And it was bad. It was like watching someone you know and love, how capable they are, how talented they could be, absolutely throw everything away. And I got the same sense here. And by all accounts, it's one man. It's Tony Khan. AEW was good. AEW was necessary. AEW is unique. It's a gathering of international talent that, yes, while I will complain and point out on my soapbox, they don't do a very good job of setting up who is a Shibata. Why should I care about an AZM? Who are these luchadors from Mexico? It's still interesting to see them there. I wish they did a better job of setting it up, and that does go back to Tony Khan. The announcers, the performers are doing what is told of them by one man who has people under him, but it is a one-stop shop with Tony Khan. And as I watch this, all I think is of a Dark Side of the Ring episode, Herb Abrams and the UWF. And if you haven't seen that episode, go back and watch it. It is a man who had pretty good financing, not to the degree of a Khan, but had incredible financing, gather an incredible roster, Bruno Sammartino as an announcer. He had Mick Foley. He had Paul Orndorff. He had all kinds of talents from around the territories under one roof. And he was the guy. He was the booker. He was the announcer. Thank God Tony doesn't do that. And you could have all the talent in the world and the money in the world and the connections, but if you don't have good story and you don't have good plans, it doesn't matter. It's going to spiral out from the center and collapse. And a big deal with AEW at the very beginning was that they were an alternative to a bad brand, WWE, 2018, 2019, 2020. A bad brand. It was not good. The performances were bad. The storylines were boring. There was an evil owner, a son of a bitch owner, who was just putting upon his insane ideas, his disrespectful visions, his abusive tendencies forced upon his roster. Well, that's all gone. Vince is gone. The stories are great. The wrestling is incredible. The characters are superstars. There's mainstream crossover. They're on national television shows, late night talk shows. They're being seen courtside at NBA games, rinkside at NHL games, the WWE, because of AEW, I truly believe, holding their feet to the fire, making them be better. The WWE is now in the best position, dare I say, ever. If we're looking at just financial metrics, if we're looking at digital metrics, if we're looking at attendance metrics, by any metric, they're as successful as they've ever been. So if I'm AEW, I'm taking a little bit of a victory lap and being like, you're welcome. Look what I did for you. I gave people an alternative. But now the issue is that AEW, they have to stand on their own. And they've got the roster to do it. They've got the talent pool, the likes of which you'll hear me say on every single Schlegel soapbox. They have got an absolute stable of thoroughbreds to do it. They have people that want to. They have support staff backstage, some of which I'm familiar with, one of which I'm great friends with, that want it to be a success. They do. But you got one guy at the top, and that's the man, Tony Khan, that reminds me of Herb Abrams, a man that took what could have been a pretty great company and disastrously ran it into a ditch. Now, I don't believe that Tony Khan has the same vices and personal proclivities, failings of a Herb Abrams, but you have two wrestling fans, multi-millionaires, in one case a billionaire, both of them having always loved wrestling and wanted to be involved in it, but neither one with any real television experience, and they're not aware of what to do with what they have. In the UWF, it went away, it died. In AEW, I want to preface right now saying, showing this AEW all-in footage, this is not the death knell. This is not the bullet in the back of the head of AEW. But it is a massive punch to the gut. And it went incredibly badly. Because the footage is shown later that evening, and apparently in arena, while the footage was being shown, a CM Punk chant broke out. And that's not what you wanted. You thought maybe a Jack Perry, maybe an AEW chant. No, you made Punk out amongst your own fan base. I'm going to guess most of which don't really care for CM Punk. You got a chant going. And then during the Young Bucks match, there was another CM Punk chant going. And sometimes that shit becomes infectious. Looking at you, what chant? So now they run the risk of having a man that's no longer in the company become a chant inside of their own arena for a match amongst people that can never happen. Perry, Punk, Elite, Punk, Kenny, Punk. It's not going to happen. It will never happen. Well, don't say never. Macho Man was inducted into the Hall of Fame. CM Punk came back. The Ultimate Warrior returned to WWE, but I'm going to say smart money says he never returns. And if all rumors, innuendo, and discussion are to be believed, this is all Tony Khan's doing. And then add fuel to this dumpster fire. Afterwards, you get FTR coming out. And FTR, you hear the announcers say in a moment that was so WCW, this isn't on the script. This isn't on the format. And I could hear Tony Schiavone saying that with the same tone and inflection that he did during the Russo era crumbling of WCW when he would swerve, bro. He'd swerve people all the way. Wait a minute, that wasn't supposed to happen. I heard that more times than I can count in the later days of WCW when they go, wait a minute, this isn't on my sheet, expecting people to gasp. But if you do that too much, and if you do that too often, people go, well, wait a minute, the swerve is the script. And then FTR, they come down and they start alluding to them fighting for AEW. You built the house, we'll put on the roof so we can blow it off. It's because you guys were not shaving each other's backs. Again, a dig at WWE from something that happened so long ago that you go, okay, guys, damn it, that was, I get it, that happened, but you're talking to such a niche portion of the audience. And then Ospreay comes out. And Ospreay, he has his promo. And Ospreay comes out, and you know me, I'm Mr. Aesthetics. I want to see you looking good. You've got Cash Wheeler in a Bart Simpson t-shirt. I can't take you seriously if you're wearing a I'm Bart Simpson, who the hell are you t-shirt. Nothing about you says just flips. No, just fists only flip, whatever the fuck they're saying is. Top guys out, just fists only flips. That's not it either. I can't say it. I don't know why. My mouth won't let me. Maybe because I'm confused by the fact that he's wearing a cartoon character on his t-shirt. Looking at you, Miro, from a few years ago, why did you have Minnie Mouse and a pink women's v-neck on? You Bulgarian brute. Aesthetics. So out comes Will Ospreay, looking like a trainer at Planet Fitness. And he says Tony Khan has given him some TV time. And I'm thinking, here we go. This guy hyping up his match, Daniel Bryan, Dynasty. This should be a great match. And there was a portion in this promo that was awesome. Younger men than you have failed. Stronger men, taller men, more accomplished men than you have tried to ground me, have tried to bring the aerial assassin out of the sky, and they've all failed. And I'm like, ooh, that's good shit. Unfortunately, that's not what anybody's going to remember. Because he then alluded to an interview that Triple H did on a podcast. Keep in mind, by the way, AEW on their flagship television show, their primary property, are responding to what people are saying on podcasts. You have Will Ospreay say, the rumor is that I'm not into the grind. I couldn't handle the grind. Let me tell you what the grind is, bruv. It's me traveling back and forth across the ocean to wrestle and put on some of the greatest matches you've ever seen. He's not wrong about any of that. His travel schedule, if he still does live in the UK, I recommend, young man, please move to Florida. Taxes are cheap. The citizenry, insane. But he discusses the grind. And then he takes a shot at Triple H, essentially saying, the grind, you're the one that's grinding on the boss's daughter. An obvious ploy, a shot, excuse me, an allusion to his relationship with Stephanie McMahon. Stephanie McMahon and Triple H got married 21 years ago and have three children and appear to be just about as happy as a couple as you're going to find. To say that that was such a misplaced and missed time shot, and that one might have reverberations down the line. We don't know how AEW is going to look or do in the next few years. May they thrive, may they survive, may they sell out Wembley every year, but you don't know that. WCW should still be around. Lucha Underground should be doing shows in Arena Mexico, but they're gone. Who knows what happens? And who knows the level of a petty or the level of burying a hatchet Triple H is capable of? And had he just said something about me not being able to grind, listen to all my accomplishments, okay, look at you. You're a hard worker. And some people might on the inside know, ah, he's referring to that one promo Triple H did or interview saying, well, there's people out there that we like to have signed, but they're not ready to put up with the WWE grind. So, hey, there you go. Godspeed. Good luck. But when you take a personal shot like that at a man's wife, that might be something he remembers. And that might be something he remembers when it comes time for Will Ospreay to look for a job. Now, Triple H is a businessman. Can he set that stuff aside? He set everything aside for Punk. So I'd say it's more likely than not if things went south at AEW for Will Ospreay or for the company as a whole, and he went over there and said, hey, I was cutting a promo. We good? I have a feeling Triple H would say, come on over, let's make money. But it's not a 0% chance that he goes, hey, sit down. Can we watch something real quick? Let me turn the telly on. Isn't that what you call it over there? Turn on the telly? And they discuss that promo, and he's got to sit in there and take a bite of that fabled Vince shit sandwich. It was an unnecessary promo from a man that might be one of the hotter properties in a company that's short on hot properties. That is a man that I feel like that they could build a future around. But the message is so all over the place on that company right now because rewind a week or so ago, and I heard them talk about this on the main show with the Rough House, and they made a great point where Edge cut the, hey, let's all be wrestling fans promo. Let's all love wrestling. This is great. I'm as happy as I've ever been. I am getting matches I never would have gotten to have, working with people that I never believed I'd get to work with, in a place where I finally feel like I could be myself. And he mentioned WWE, and people started to boo, and he goes, no, don't boo those people. Cheer everyone. Their success is our success, and our success is their success, is what he was alluding to. And that was good. And the point that Chris and Marty, I believe, made was that, was that the guy to give that promo? I mean, he really is kind of a hand-me-down from WWE, but a good one. And I think, you know what, maybe he has more national prominence that had an AEW original done it, like a Ricky Starks, for example, or a Darby Allin, or maybe a returned MJF. I'm not sure. But Edge, Adam Copeland, he's very popular, so I could see why the decision was made to have him give that speech. And it was good. And then fast forward to this Dynamite that we're discussing right now, where everything sort of went sideways, where he has a match with Penta, the very beginning, for the TNT Championship. And it's great. It's a unique matchup. Now, it's a part of the Cope Open, so there's not a lot of story there. You're not getting a lot of that in AEW. That's a huge complaint of mine. Tony Khan is a matchmaker. He is not a booker. But let's look at it for what it is. It was a great match. It was a lot of fun. And you go, okay, 2 weeks in a row, You got Adam Copeland coming out there and kind of being the flag bearer. This is nice. And then the rest of the show is borderline a finger poke of doom. It's borderline giving away Mankind wins the title. The mood allegedly backstage is one of sadness, morose, depression. The Mad King rules. Now, obviously, a different type of Mad King than Vince, but similar in ways I wish there weren't similarities in the buck stops with me, and this is going to happen regardless of the, I'm assuming, multiple wise voices around here that I am hoping say, maybe we shouldn't do this. Maybe we should just focus on our great roster and building up some stories for Dynasty and marching towards All In at Wembley. But no, that's not the case. Nobody talked about the other matches on the show. They talked about this backstage footage. And I'm also confused at having the Bucks air it. Because the footage, I'm assuming, this is just me filling in blanks here, was meant to show that Punk was incorrect or the aggressor, or people would get that Punk is the bad guy in the situation. It's wrestling. There's good guys and bad guys. And in this case, we're going to try and make Punk out to be the bad guy by showing this footage. But you have it shown by two heels. Still not completely into what the Bucks are doing. They appear to be playing characters. And you have the heels show a clip of footage for a guy that to a specific part of the AEW hardcore fan base is their ultimate heel, CM Punk. So does that make the Bucks faces in the setting that they showed it in, that utility closet on that monitor near a dry erase board and boxes of equipment, your EVPs? Show it in an office. Go back to the production truck. Show it amongst the monitors, the equipment, something a little more grandiose. Again, aesthetics. It looked like something you'd see at the goddamn Cow Palace in the 80s. It just looked so low rent, and two guys dressing as characters, immediately the visual of it struck me as, oh, you're going to be showing it on some 24-inch 720p monitor? Okay. And then they came back, and obviously they're making allusions to a comment that CM Punk himself made, by the way. If you missed this, I believe the quote is, and I apologize if I get it correct, if you have a problem with Jungle Boy, chances are you're the problem. That's a CM Punk quote, an interesting dig at him. I was like, okay, good memories. And you could see that underneath of Matt Jackson's blazer, he had a scapegoat jacket buttoned up. And I'm going to pick at a nit here because this gets back to Tony Khan, who I think oversees pretty much everything. And the people that he put in place are his to oversee. They had a shot where Matt Jackson was going to, at the end, unbutton his blazer and stand up to reveal the scapegoat logo. And he stands up, and he unbuttons the blazer, and he's out of frame. You don't see the scapegoat logo on the shirt. By the way, a shirt that is sold out. So that's an interesting facet of this. People are buying this. They're not buying any of the other horrendous shirts that they make. What is going on with the Daniel Garcia shirt? Someone needs to be fired. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up and facepalm how something so bad could exist. But the scapegoat shirt, I think people kind of like. It's white on black. Where have I seen that before? Maybe Bullet Club, maybe NWO, maybe Austin 316, white on black logo, interesting design, scapegoat. That doesn't necessarily annotate wrestling. That's just a state of mind. That's a mood. That's a being. That's an interesting product. So good for them for selling out that shirt. And he stands up and he's out of frame. And that's a segment that you could have done a take two on or panned back and shown. Now, it's still sold out, so way to go. But it seems like a cloud has been cast over a company that it's the wrong time too. And if you look at the history going back of WCW and WWE and the Monday Night War and the ascent of Nitro and the descent, it was about a five-year period, 96 to 2001. Well, we are fast approaching the five-year anniversary of AEW. That's coming up in October. And ticket sales are not great. Merchandise sales are anemic. The reason we're talking about them is not because of the incredible roster of people, dare I say, as good or better in regards to depth, uniqueness, capability than WWE. WWE just happens to take all of their characters and use them as good as they possibly could be used in most cases. Not everybody, but for the most part, I can name about 10 stars to AEW's one that are being correctly used by the people in place. And we're coming up on that fifth year where ticket sales ain't great. This got a ratings bump to 800,000. They should be cresting a million, but they're not. And then I know there is no love lost amongst the fan base for Eric Bischoff. Obviously, you think I'm critical of AEW. I think he genuinely hates that company. Me, I am frustrated by it. I think when Tony Khan took a shot at Ted Turner back in the day that permanently turned Eric Bischoff on him. But he does have a podcast out, and I know, get past the Eric portion of it if you don't like him. I happen to like the guy, but I get why AEW fans would not. But he does have an interview with a man that used to run the UFC's YouTube. And he is a YouTube analytics expert. And he has a breakdown of numbers. This isn't opinions. This isn't what they should do. This is a, here are the hard numbers about multiple people's YouTube channels, podcasts, UFCs, WWE, and AEWs. And you hear that, well, people are watching TV differently these days. There used to be 6 million people, 7 million people watching. People have migrated online. That's the excuse you hear quite a bit. Seems to be a bit of a parroting when you get into somebody that's a diehard AEW fan. You know, hey, the ratings aren't there. Well, it's not about ratings anymore. It's about, you know, DVR and digital viewing and online viewing and some of their interactions. And the primary one, the number one streaming service in the world, make no bones about it, is YouTube. AEW has a YouTube channel, and this gentleman breaks down the YouTube analytics, and you go, okay, well, maybe AEW, a younger audience, a more tech savvy audience, I would guess, they're watching this thing digitally. They're moving online to watch this. And he breaks it down. And the AEW YouTube viewership is not just plateaued, it's plummeted. So where is this mysterious non-television watching audience? Is it all DVR? Is it all Twitter clip highlights? Where's the audience? Where did it go? Why did it leave? In my opinion, the answer is Tony Khan. It's not the wrestlers. It's not Ospreay. It's not Okada. It's not Omega. It's not Hangman. It's not Colt Cabana. It's not the Dark Order. It's not Ospreay. It's not Kyle Fletcher. It's not everybody inside of the patriarchy. My God, how great are they? It's not the Don Callis family. It's none of the women. It's none of the people that they have from AAA or New Japan Pro Wrestling or the occasional TNA crossover. It's Tony Khan. And if Tony Khan wants his baby to survive, he needs to step away. Because I think AEW has to survive. It needs to survive. When two wrestling companies are hot, the industry's good. The WWE, I'll say it again from the top of the mountain, is as good as it's ever been, maybe ever right now, because of AEW. It made them change their game. It put their feet to the fire. WWE should be sending AEW bouquets of flowers. They realize, oh shit, we're not the only kid on the block anymore. People have somewhere else to go to work. Free agents could head elsewhere. Maybe we've got to have, I don't know, good stories, engaging plot lines, and then a match that pays off. Holy shit. And they did it. I implore AEW to do the same now. Let WWE hold the fire to your feet, which by all accounts, they are. Don't swing at them. Don't take these internet digs at them. Don't refer to quips made on a podcast that your audience might not know. Focus on who you have, and who you have are some of the best collections of wrestlers, men and women, domestic, international, we've ever seen. And it's sadly to think that to have that happen, yet again, I will say Tony Khan needs to step away. If you love pro wrestling as much as I think you do, and I think you do, Tony, you had an E-Fed, you played with figures, you were at All In, you financed this whole thing, you need to understand that you are 20 times the fan that you are the executive. And I've said this to Chris and Marty before on the Rough House soapbox behind their Patreon. I can't encourage you enough. Good Patreon content with the fellas is, I would say I'm a Ravens fan. I'm a UFC fan. I'm a fan of certain game studios, Bethesda. I love their Fallout games. I'm loving that Fallout television show right now. If you put me in charge of it, the next season of Fallout will be the worst television you've ever seen. If you put me in charge of the Ravens, it will go 0-17. If you put me in charge of the UFC, I have heavyweights knocking out featherweights and them dying in the octagon. I don't know what I'm doing on an executive level. I'm merely a fan. And I want Tony to realize that. And I want him to hand off the reins to that cadre of people backstage. My God, from Chris Hero to Jerry Lynn to Dean Malenko to all the other people. Rehire Matt Hardy and just make him a creative executive. Arn Anderson, the level of people backstage that you have that you could put together a cabal. Taz with ECW. I would hire a crew, a booking council, if you were. And have them handle it, and maybe, just maybe, for huge decisions, my God, Becky Lynch is a free agent, should we get her, do we pay her the $5 million a year she's demanding, Tony, can we have the money, and Tony should say, yes, you can, tell me the story behind her, why is she here, okay, why is she coming in, how do we introduce her, or do we just do what we're currently doing with Okada, who should be one of the biggest stars in your company, and he's returning from weeks away outside of backstage vignettes, having squash matches over people you've never heard of. How does that get anybody over or move that plot line along? It doesn't. Good story does. The match should be the end result of an interesting plot. Yes, I get it. This match is going to fuck. It's going to go off. Oh, I'm so here for it. But there needs to be a reason for it. Not just two characters clashing. That seems to be Tony Khan's only strength. Taking player A and putting them against player B and then seeing what happens. Well, we kind of know secretly in the back shadows of the hallways and locker rooms what's going to happen because it's a predetermined contest against two performers. There needs to be story. And he doesn't have that. And your reflections in the ticket sales, attendance, television ratings, YouTube ratings, merchandise, social media interaction, it's all reflecting that. So I'll end by saying what I did at the beginning. AEW is good and it is necessary and it is so valuable to this industry. And if the man at the top of it wants to have it be as successful as I know he does, he needs to realize or maybe have people have a, I don't know, Booker intervention and set him aside and say, hey, we got to reach over and get that pencil from you, pal. We're going to save this from you and you're going to see how much it thrives when you write the checks and hang out and high five and hug that new acquisition at the press conference afterwards. Give us a year or two. We'll get this thing back on track. WCW turned it around from the Dungeon of Doom era, the Booty Man era. Oh my God, Loch Ness. Trust me, I was there in WCW in 94, 95 when no one thought it would ever succeed. I was there, WWE 93, 94, also going, Jesus Christ, why do I watch this? It can be turned around. You just have to be honest and say, hey, it's me. I'm the one that's getting in the way. Because I'm as big a fan of AEW as Tony Khan is a fan of AEW. But time to step back. Let's get back to what brought you guys to the dance. Being an alternative to the WWE. Not a minor league to it. Not a small way down the ladder pipsqueak throwing verbal rocks and pebbles up at it. Not being a TNA of the aughts, a cast-off place for old WWE performers to go catch a paycheck and die. You need to be AEW, All Elite Wrestling, 2017, 18, 19, that set the world on fire, an alternative. I beg you, because I, Justin Schlegel, am an AEW fan.
The Roughhouse Podcast is a weekly podcast fueled by coffee, pizza rolls, and the stench of dirty litter boxes. Follow Christoph and Marty on Twitter at RoughhouseSGW, at Facebook.com/TheRoughhousePodcast, and at Patreon.com/TheRoughhousePodcast for early access to episodes, exclusive podcasts, Roughhouse redos, and Roughhouse Divided movie trivia games. New episodes drop every single Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Subscribe, motherfuckers!
This is the Roughhouse podcast with Justin and Christoph.
That's it.
Fuck Christoph. He's terrible with his information. Okay. Hey, this is The Rock. Shut your mouth, jabronis, and listen up, because this is the Roughhouse podcast with
Marty
and my least favorite man on the planet, Christoph.